Welcome to today's CoreCast. I'm your host, Jim Montalto. Staff division and those who foster it can be difficult obstacles to overcome and manage in any workplace. In a field like corrections, though, not having an atmosphere that promotes employee unity can be especially detrimental and downright hazardous considering the conditions officials must face each day. So today we have Joe Bouchard. He's a librarian with the Michigan Department of Corrections, and he also teaches a course on corrections and psychology. He just finished presenting a lecture on staff division and is here to talk with us about identifying certain personality types that can lead to this problem, along with some advice on how to best manage it. So welcome, Joe.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's good to have you. So tell us, how did you become an expert on this topic about staff division?
Well, naturally, I have this ability and desire to watch people, and that includes a little self-scrutiny, actually. But it wasn't until the year 2000, around June, where one of my writings became nationally recognized and fostered a lot of calls, or harvested a lot of calls, I should say. And this was on Clicks, actually. And the editor called me up and said that I've hit a major artery. And since then, I haven't quit writing about it.
On the staff division.
On staff division, different manifestations of it.
And then you turned it into a presentation, which is something that you did this past weekend. So who did you present to?
We presented to the Michigan Corrections Association at Lake Superior State University in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And that throws a rather wide criminal justice net. We had some academics. We also had people from field offices, parole and probation. And we had line staff, we even had a librarian from prisons, and we had a couple wardens, and Director Pat Caruso of the Michigan Department of Corrections showed up as well.
Wow, so you had quite a diverse group.
Yes.
So in this lecture, you mentioned pretty much at the beginning a great corrections philosopher who said, corrections is not a solo sport. Who actually said that, and how does that tie into what you spoke about?
Did I actually say great corrections philosopher? Well, At the beginning, I give my disclaimers, and one of my discretionary disclaimers is this is a very serious topic, but sometimes we'll be doing it in a less than serious way. This great corrections philosopher was actually me from an article about 2003. But what I'm trying to do is get people to think about not only the team imperative of stopping staff division or mitigating it, but the individual imperative, which is the same imperative of mitigating staff division. So it's a look at the team and the individual within the team.
And how each of them relates to each other, but also you had mentioned also a little self-scrutiny before. It's also helping individuals realize kind of who they might be and how they act within the team too, right?
That is crucial. That is crucial because staff division, mitigating it, I should say, starts at home. We have to look in the mirror first before we can start looking at others. And I want to make clear, I don't want to be seen as some preachy librarian with a writing habit who suddenly decides to go point fingers. It's a lot of self-scrutiny that I'm dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And also personalities that you've seen along the way in your career, I would imagine. Because I was thinking one of the things that you present, you use the acronym POINTS to outline the different types of bullies that exist. So that must have been from some research or just some analysis of the personalities you've worked with.
That came from a deputy warden, actually, who wanted me to help her as a librarian find some resources on bullying. Then that turned on a light switch in my mind, thinking, a bully is not a bully is not a bully.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, you don't just have your garden variety physical type bully. So very briefly, we got points. P is for a physical bully. That's your standard beat 'em up after school type, which really doesn't go away after middle school, but comes into professions as well. O is the obnoxious bully. And that is someone that can clear a room with their seemingly repugnant personality. And that's someone who argues so much that you would rather concede a point rather than defend your own point of view. I is the intellectual bully. Maybe that's a Freudian slip because I am an intellectual bully of sorts, a condescender, and I'm a work in progress, so that's a little self-scrutiny there. and this necessity bully. And that's someone who engages in tough love and might be heard to say something absurd such as, I beat you because I love you.
Mm-hmm.
He's a together bully, and that's a clique-driven bully, where dealing with that person on an individual basis may not be so difficult or so much of a staff divider, but when they have their clique, their posse, their homies, whatever you want to term them, when they have their cool clique around, they are different individuals indeed. And lastly, the S is for sexual bully. Now, every now and again, if I have a lively group, I might get a snicker out of the phrase sexual bully, but it's really not a laughing matter. This is someone, either male or female, who uses a perfectly valid complaint system, the sexual harassment reporting system, and they pervert it to their own needs. For example, if someone says, I want you to do this job, and the sexual bully would tell the supervisor, I don't want that assignment. You're doing that because I'm male. Don't you like males? That's your basic sexual bully tactic.
By separating them out. You know, there seems that some of the personalities, or maybe one of them, like, or not all of them are intentionally harmful, like the necessity bully. It seems like that those people might do something, like you had said, the tough love approach, but you still categorize it as a bullying tactic, whether it's, is that something that's intentionally done?
The necessity bully will not always know that they are doing it, or they might know they're doing it, but they might not see it as bullying. They might see it as tough love, as a way to let a person learn. Now, sometimes we let our kids, when they ride a bike, maybe scrape their knees as a lesson, or maybe no one respects the flame quite like the fool who's badly burned. There might be that sort of mentality with that. But you're right. You're correct. They don't know all the time that they're doing that.
Right. But intentionally or not, again, the key to this is discovering maybe the type of person that you are or the type of person that you're working with, and then, which we'll discuss a little later, is then how to relate or how to communicate or how to work with that person. And you had listed other personality types as well, like the complainer, the critic, program basher, and even one called the town crier. So can you explain those just a little bit and also how they contribute to the coworker divisiveness?
Okay, I can say a big sort of umbrella for all of those. They all contribute, and I'll explain them in a moment, but they all contribute by making others uncomfortable. Now, yeah, you're not going to be the most comfortable person in the prison. I think that's unhealthy. But less comfortable than is necessary is what these dividers do. That's the main conceptual look at it. A complainer is someone who has a problem all the time and is a whiner, basically. The critic is not the same thing. If you think of a complainer as a little chihuahua, you can think of the critic as a Rottweiler.
Mm-hmm.
The critic is a complainer on steroids, and if you offer them a solution, they have a counter problem for each solution. Now, you also mentioned program basher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is a very, very difficult type, and it's ubiquitous. Typically, but not always, they are custody types who believe that programming has no place in corrections. I come from a program background, but with a strong custody base, such as contraband control and monitoring and observing. But I do realize the merits of both, and programming is a necessary tool that we use in order to relieve stress among prisoners and give them some diversions. But there are people out there, the program smashers, who believe that there is no place whatsoever for those stress-relieving mechanisms. Ways to educate, ways to overturn a conviction, ways to get to the gym to get some physical relief from the stress. So program bashers, though not exclusively custody, are big dividers, and they put the us versus them into the equation. And lastly, town crier, I believe you mentioned, Jim. Go back to 9/11/2001. Where the whole nation, well, the whole world indeed was in shock, where terrorism came to our shores. I witnessed someone, a staff member, who will remain nameless, of course, go from classroom to classroom, from room to room, acting as though they were part of the media and telling what is going on, blow by blow, of the tragedy going. And that made not only staff members tense, but it also made an already tense prisoner body even more tense. Now, nothing happened, fortunately, on those days, but it's remembered clearly in my mind and by others how this person didn't think and decide to become Wolf Blitzer rather than a corrections professional.
Right.
Nothing against Wolf Blitzer, you understand, of course, but it's not their place to play the media.
Right. Because these type of personalities, and also the points types of bullies, they harbor or they create some kind of negative atmosphere, it sounds like, from what you're saying, that actually even the inmates can sense.
Yes, and that is key. That is key, because they will pick up on this, and those that would endeavor to divide or foster these divisions, and of course it's not all of them, but those that would endeavor to divide would put in a lot of effort and time to create the setup and to trick staff to think that they are the friends and other staff are not, and therefore get contraband into the facility. And that's a gateway to danger, disunity, and possibly death, if you take it to its extreme.
Mm-hmm. Now, I thought you had listed some other personalities also that could cause some detriment into the group or the coworker environment.
Oh, there are certainly lots of them, and there are some that are unpublished and still waiting. Would you want me to go through a few?
Just a couple more would be great, thank you.
Sure. The Blaze. The Blaze is someone who gives a backhanded compliment or a little insult to a colleague, such as someone commenting on someone's looks or lack of looks. Well, sometimes that's just a way of coping with a stressful situation. However, the Blaze can become a conflagration and burn out of control, where people start taking it personally and make it into an insult, sort of Don Rickles hour. Sometimes you go too far. Jealous colleague. Sometimes people misconstrue professionalism or the need to aspire and succeed as a way of fawning or being obsequious. And therefore, they harbor this jealousy and, of course, the rumors that come with that. And that's another divider. I can give you one more. And this doesn't really need much explanation, and this exists in all walks of life, all ages. I'm sure it exists in all dimensions. This is the backstabber. Someone who will do a little subtle sabotage behind the back and spread rumors.
Yeah, which is all adds to this this kind of atmosphere, this negative atmosphere. Now, I was wondering, in the classes, in your lecture, as you're going through this, do you find that maybe at the beginning your class attendees might be saying, well, that's not me, you know, I'm clearly not like that, but then, you know, as you explain the personalities a little bit more, then are people beginning to think, well, you know, I could be like that, and, you know, that may not be really bad, but there are ways that I could probably fix my personality a little bit. I mean, because isn't this part of the solution, too, for people to discover within themselves what they're doing to create this type of atmosphere?
Absolutely. It's the individual within the team realizing their own imperative within the team imperative. I can give you two quick examples of that, too. The first of which, my partner was contacted, Mike Plourd, who does the conflict resolution portion of this program. He, incidentally, was the person who trained me in 1993 when I first came into the department. But he received an email from someone who attended our program on the 23rd of this month. And she said, I am an obnoxious bully. She realized this, and it was kind of a surprise to her, but she was kind enough to share this with Mike, and he's since shared it with me. Another one I can think of happened in Nashville about 3 years ago. I believe this was at ACA, but nevertheless, I can sometimes watch and see a swagger or a posture or hear comments and identify a maverick, you know, someone who goes along to their own beat and might not necessarily follow policy and procedure. Well, this one maverick in particular in Nashville, big imposing guy, I thought, yes, this is a maverick. Well, break time came. This guy was towering over me. I thought, oh my God, what did I say? But he said, you know what, Bouchard, I'm a maverick. So I thought, this is friendly enough. I said, I kind of pegged you as one. He said, I never realized that before, but he did, and what has become of this Maverick, I don't know. But he realized it there in 2003.
Right. Well, and that's interesting, because as you go through at the beginning of the lecture, the different types of personalities, but then you also provide a few strategies on dealing with them. So I'm sure that the people themselves who recognize, you know, who they are, and then there are the other people who recognize, hey, I work with one of these guys, you actually provide some strategies. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. I have two main ones, and these are actually the gateway to the conflict resolution portion that Mike Brewer talks about. But to start off, we have umbrella. And umbrella was a metaphor in my mind, thinking about how we can huddle under an umbrella in corrections to weather the storms, the cycle storms that come against us. I'm not just talking fiscal storms or bed space storms. I'm talking about staff division. Sometimes we get thick and heavy with staff division. So under this umbrella, all the letters of umbrella represent a strategy. U is for uniformity. That's acting the same way all the time so people can gauge how you would react to something. M is very conceptual but very important to me. Mission statement. And that is a single guiding principle that all people from all walks of the profession would have. In Michigan, our new mission statement speaks of safety for all, staff, prisoners, the public. And anyone in food service, anyone in personnel, anyone in healthcare, anyone in the segregation rocks, even librarians, know that that's something they aspire to in their own way, the safety. So we all have that common goal. B is very simple. That's for breaking destructive habits. I've been told I'm a little sarcastic. I'm trying to break that habit, and that's my self-scrutiny. And others have to look at themselves to see what habits they need to break. R is a cornerstone, and that is for realism. This program is neither Pollyanna, over-optimistic, nor is it deeply pessimistic. We want to strike the balance, and there's always that undertone of realism as we go through. E is for empathy, and that's walking a mile in someone else's shoes and trying to realize the worst aspect of their job while you think about the worst aspect of yours and realize that we all have different sorts of foci, but all the same, we have something that we don't like in our job. L is for loyalty, and that's pretty much loyalty toward the profession itself. Loyalty toward your partners, loyalty toward other staff, no matter how they may be trying you. The other L, L2, is local culture. And that's why I ask people to try to think of what sort of things are worshipped or liked or disliked in the local culture of your workplace. You have to try to think how things would be interpreted. You have to know the beast within which you're working. And A is something that your grandma or father or mother might tell you. That's act professionally. Very simple, but that's a good way to punctuate umbrella, I think. The other mechanism is luck. And with luck, it incorporates some of the other elements, but it's a little more conceptual. But these are elements that have been covered in other training across the nation, in other systems, other departments. L is for listening. That's knowing the difference between active and passive listening and using meaningful prompts. And it's also, as you listen, you have to try to think, is this person frustrated and venting, or is this person a whiner? U is understanding. That incorporates empathy, looking at from the point of view of others, and also trying to imagine the burden of scrutiny piled on the disenfranchised staff, and trying to understand why people act the way they do. So you can take listening and understanding and combine them and work in communication, which is simply stated in other places at other times, a two-way endeavor, not a lecture. And it's a way to demonstrate that you have a grasp of someone else's perspective as you paraphrase. And K is for knowledge, and that's knowing the conversation binds and knowing that there are official lines of gossip or conversation and unofficial. And knowledge very much is about knowing oneself. So those are the two main mechanisms that give segue to the conflict resolution portion of our program.
Mm-hmm. And those are the strategies you can follow. Now, it is possible that these ideas just might not work on some people, and you know, if so, what do you do then when you have to work with somebody?
Absolutely, Jim, is absolutely possible. In fact, probable that some small percentage will not be swayed by anyone's efforts, no matter how pure. Again, this is a realistic-based program, based in realism, I should say. You have to look for a couple caveats. Some people might appreciate a caring peer, but then again, there are some sorts that think you are an overzealous reformer and an unwanted counselor, and you might even be tagged with a little cry of harassment if you're trying to be a do-gooder to certain people. So it's up to each practitioner, each peer, to see, is this something that I want to help alleviate this staff division and all its ill effects, or I'm afraid of being called a harasser. So good intentions could be viewed as meddlesome, and it will not work all the time. On some it will never work, but you have to keep in mind that staff division is easy, but repair is hard. If you don't try, you're not going to know if it would work, is my philosophy on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what does this all lead to? We did the different personalities and then strategies on the actions on how to deal with them. What's the goal of getting people to recognize these difficult personalities and learning to manage them better?
This is very pragmatic. It's not simply the warm, fuzzy feeling in the pit of your stomach that you did well. It is much more than that, Jim. We're looking at a focus on work that needs to be fostered. Sometimes we are so busy in our own soap operas playing chess with the other person, a sort of insult chess or avoiding sabotage, that we forget what we're there to do. We're there to monitor and observe, keep people safe, and to make programs effective and efficient and meaningful. Sometimes we're pulled away from that because we're playing the staff division game. Now, there are a lot of factors that will dictate how probable all these are. The following things I say are, and they're contingent on each other, but what we're looking at is possibility of stress levels to be relieved. It'll be a nicer place to work is one of the first effects of less staff division. Then you come to less stress leave taken, and there's an economic gain for the department or the workplace. Now, these aren't always evident, but they are there. And I'm assured that most everyone listening is a taxpayer. I myself am a taxpayer, so while I'm working to improve services for the taxpayer, I'm also working to improve it for myself as a taxpayer. So it's a personal imperative as well. So, lower turnover is another thing we need to look at, too. Recruitment costs are high, training costs are high, and retention costs are very high as well. If someone leaves due to staff division after a year or two, the benefits of training this person and recruiting and retaining are squandered, so the taxpayer never gets that back. These are some of the positive outcomes of working well with difficult colleagues that I believe are possible.
Which is exactly what you're hoping that people would take away from this class, and it's safe to assume that these, by looking at these attitudes and everybody working on trying to adjust them, adjust their own personalities and what they might doing, it's to present this more of a positive atmosphere, and which will in turn improve the services, relieve stress levels, make it a nicer place to work.
That's an excellent way to sum it up, certainly.
Right. So uniformity, mission statement, breaking destructive habits, realism, empathy, loyalty, local culture, acting professionally, and then listening, understanding, communication, and knowledge. These are all positive actions that we can probably all work on in one way or another, both in our personal and in our professional lives then, huh?
Yes, and they may seem a little simplistic, but sometimes what you are told by your grandma or your mom or dad on how to act, they are simple, but they're not always adhered to. We get caught up in what we consider urgent things, but there is a certain sort of maintenance that is necessary for this sort of endeavor.
Right, which is a continual process.
Certainly. Just like contraband control, you you never stop working at it, and you can't win them all, but you keep trying.
That's right, and that's what's the most important thing. Well, that's terrific. I think this has been very helpful. And Joe, thanks for talking with us about managing staff division, and thanks very much for being with us.
Certainly. If I may, I'd like to offer an email address for people interested in either a bibliography or contents of this program or any suggestions.
Sure, go ahead. So,
okay. It is Bouchard@up.net, which is spelled Bouchard@up.net.
Right.
And as a corrections professional, I do implore everyone to put a subject line that will talk about staff division. That way I'll be able to identify it and then open it up with no fear whatsoever.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thanks. That was Joe Bouchard from the Michigan Department of Corrections, who recently gave a lecture on recognizing and managing certain personality traits that can lead to staff division in the corrections workplace. And that concludes today's CoreCast. Thank you for joining us. For the Corrections Connection News Network, this is Jim Montalto.